I'm speaking today with Roland Chavez, who is a candidate for City Council at Large number 3. Roland, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
I spent 34 years serving the citizens of Houston as a Houston firefighter, and did not really ever thought about being a firefighter. I was going to school to become a high school baseball coach. I had entered into play sports in high school and played a little bit of baseball in college. Not really successful in my dream. And summer jobs came after 3.5 years of college and working construction. Winter came, and number of friends from high schools, my high school year at Reagan High School, joined the fire department. Reagan High School had a fire administration course where roughly over 3 years, about 75 of the kids went to join the fire department. By that time, I was already 3 years behind, and winter came, and I didn't like working in the winter time in the construction, and you know, this was during the boom years, and so I joined the fire department. Within 2 weeks of entering the fire department, I loved it. And early on in my career, got involved with the labor union as a young kid, as a steward, and from then on, just began learning the politics. I was always active in high schools and in my schools as far as student governments, and including in the junior college level I went to, I was involved in the student government, and it was just something that just I was very, very fond of, and listening and learning. I got involved early enough in the with the association to where I learned the business of city council and city hall. Worked my way up through the Firefighter Association, the union, where I became president. And I know where we were when I took office in 2004. I knew how I left it. And I knew then, too, that I wanted to continue wherever I went to next. I knew that if I could make a difference in the world of our organization, of our profession here locally, and being born and raised, loving this city the way I do it, growing up from the first ward, I know I can make a difference in people's lives simply because I'm grounded. I'm homegrown, and I've worked so hard, knowing our whole city from the aspect point of being a Houston firefighter, because I traveled the whole city working for our membership, and I know what the city is like. I know what it lacks, and I'm not saying I just want to continue what council members have already done, but I know I can make a difference in people's lives.
Well, as you know, of course, the city has been involved in a bit of a dispute with the firefighters over the firefighters' pension fund. The city does not have meet and confer ability with the firefighters as it does with the police and the municipal employees' pension. They've been trying to get someone in the legislature to sponsor a bill to do that, but that they've not been successful so far. The firefighters' union, for its part, says that the city has all the information it needs regarding the financial information of the pension fund, and that the pension fund is sufficiently well funded that the city doesn't have anything to worry about, and it's a small part of the city's budget anyway. What's your opinion on this, and do you support the efforts of the city to try and get a bill passed that would require meet and confer?
No, and there's meet and confer. Remind you, you mentioned that the union had stated this. The difference is the labor organization represents the members currently in the fire department, which is for the labor and the hours and the wages. The pension is
Two separate organizations.
The pension is the group that the city's targeting to ask about entering into a meet and confer agreement. The firefighter association, the union, at one point we did have a meet and confer under Lee Brown. It didn't work, and so there's a history already there that meet and confer doesn't work. And so the fear is that most for all point purposes, the employees of the city don't trust elected officials. And whenever the city took over the pension for both police and municipal, look what it did to it. The fire pension isn't in the same boat that the police and municipal pension is in. Firefighters' pension is pretty solvent. Matter of fact, very, very solvent. One of the 10 best in the entire country. The fear is about letting the city take over under a meet and confer agreement, and then all of a sudden it's going to be used, obviously, in ways that it's not going to be beneficial to the citizens of Houston, the taxpayers, along with the employee group. Now, this is the reason why the Firefighter Association entered and went out for a referendum in 2003, 2004, to the citizens for collective bargaining. It has more teeth to it. Now, granted, you can get into a 2-year, 3-year long-term contract if you like, and you basically can fund your budgets knowing what you have to fund those years for. The fire pension group, could there be some negotiations? I believe me being a council member will actually be able to, one, inform elected officials and along with those that are concerned about in the avenue of how the pension is going. The pension is not 9% of the entire city budget pays for both municipal, police, and fire. Just 9% of almost a $3.9 billion enterprise fund and a $2.0 billion general fund. 9% of that. That's never even shared with the public on exactly. The pension waived the actuaries that the city's supposed to be paying now to the tune of savings over $200 million, approximately over $237 million over a period of maybe 10 years. The city, the fire pension has done that. And yet that's not shared with the public.
I mean, the concern that you all often hear in relation to the city's pension obligations is that, you know, yes, it is 9% now, but the concern is that it's going to grow at an unsustainable rate over time, and that's going to have a negative effect on the city's long-term finances. Do you agree with that? And if you think there are issues with the city's long-term finances, what would you do about them?
Well, I would definitely, when elected, obviously, I'd bring the parties to the table and to obviously have dialogue, have an open dialogue. I did it when I was held responsible for the very first collective bargaining contract with the city. I had an open dialogue. One, I had to share the information with my membership in order to be able to share with them exactly, this is where we're at. We just got our very first collective bargaining attempt to have a contract. We can't go out and reach for the whole pie. So let's work at it. And that's exactly what we did. I will be able to bring all the groups together. Now, can we, obviously there's going to be some differences, but I believe we can come to an agreement and we can talk. But not to the point to where I'm not going to be in favor of supporting the city's efforts to want to bring the pension people under a meet and confer. It didn't work. And administrations change. I understand that. But there's a history already about meet and confer. And it didn't work.
Do you believe the city is in good financial shape overall? What's your opinion of the budget they passed this year?
I think, you know what, we went from one budget to where the fear of laying off police officers, laying off firefighters, but then they did lay off some municipal workers, to all of a sudden look at the economy here as far as the whole, not just the city of Houston, but the general metropolitan area. I mean, you've got companies seeking new opportunities here, housing. The market is up. The returns are doing well. The port has, look what's advancing around the port area. Obviously, the medical center has always been one of the highest visible spots here in the entire world. So I think the city is doing well. I just feel as if that I think we need to really concentrate more on the neighborhoods that really have been neglected for many, many years. I've been a firefighter. I go through these neighborhoods. I know what's out there. I'm sure we have a Super Bowl coming in the year 2017. We're going to spruce up the city in the next 4 or 5 years, getting ready for that. And then what happens? We go back to neglecting our already decaying neighborhoods. My mom still lives in the same house our dad bought in 1952. In the first ward, right there on Spring Street, the hike and bike trail, which used to be a railroad tracks. And you can see the development going up. But there's still neighborhoods there that the homes are built in 1900, 1905, like my mom's home. And there's still no ditches. There's still no, it floods. I think that the city's doing well. I firmly believe, though, that we're not addressing the issues of the core neighborhoods that actually need the assistance.
Well, it's interesting you mention that because, as you know, as someone who lives in the Heights, as you do, you know, there's a lot of tension lately between what the neighborhoods want going on in their neighborhoods and what the developers are doing. Right. I mean, right near here, there's a development that a lot of the neighbors don't want. It's, you know, basically what you've got is situations of developers wanting to build, you know, high-rise, multi-unit developments in areas that didn't have them before, usually where it's mostly surrounded by single-family houses. You know, there's not much from, you know, from the city perspective that can be done, you know, that the neighborhoods can do about this. The city recently revamped its you know, it's development codes, Chapter 42, but it still didn't really, you know, that issue is still kind of unresolved and leaves neighborhoods feeling like there's only so, there's no, not much they can do about this. It's good that development wants to come in, but what, you know, what, if anything, should the city be thinking about doing to balance the need of developers and the needs of neighborhoods?
I think you said it, balance. And I don't think there's enough of that. I don't think there's enough of communicating with the neighborhoods or with the civic clubs or the organizations that want to make preserve the integrity of already well-established neighborhoods or older neighborhoods. You think about this, like this particular neighborhood that we're in, the Woodland Heights. We've been long-term residents since 1966 when our parents, when I was 10 years old here. If my mom or my grandparents were still living here with all the development, chances are they wouldn't be able to afford to live here. They'd have to be moved out. There's a lot of there's a lot of people whose families had to move away. Well, they chose to move away early on, but now that we never did, we stayed here. And look, we enjoyed the development. We enjoyed the preserving of the heritage of this community so much to the point, though, that my taxes are as much as what my dad bought the home for. And if I'm fortunate enough to have a nice job to be able to pay for it, I couldn't very well move in. And so we want to try to get people to come back and move into communities like this. You know, there's a lot of middle-income people who are first-time buyers, could never afford something like this. I inherited this home. I couldn't very well go out and buy it. But I think there needs to be a better dialogue of communicating with the civic organizations and with the communities about development. I understand the development that's going on here currently, the new project that's going to go in the Park Lane Apartments area right there below Taylor Street Bridge, the new complex is going to go up right here on Morrison, just probably even going to make a view of, no longer we'll be able to see the skyscrapers from downtown from here. But I think that because of listening to my neighbors, they feel as if that not enough information was conveyed with them or shared with them in the times whenever the discussion was allowed to be able to have input. This isn't the only neighborhood. There's neighborhoods all over town like this, all over. And did we learn a lesson from the Ashby High Rise? I'm not sure. Let me get over there and find out and read the history of it, because I'd be more than happy to educate myself as far as wanting to know what actually happened over there. And I'm all for development. I'm all for development, especially is what comes with it. New infrastructure, obviously the drainage and all of this. All this happens whenever you have new development, but not at the pace or at the cost of a neighborhood like this. The property values are going to go down simply because all of a sudden you have some new projects coming in that don't work well or blend well with the integrity of what this neighborhood was already built about.
Now, you have, in recent years, you served on a committee that former council member Adrian Garcia asked you to serve on regarding light rail development on the North Line and, you know, the concerns of the neighborhood as it was undergoing construction. That's set to open later this year. It'll be the first light rail line we've finished since the first one. Tell me about that experience. You know, what is it you observed? And, you know, what you expect will get out of having that light rail line.
I was honored when the council member, Mr. Adrian Garcia, asked me to chair. At that time, I was president of the Firefighters Union. Obviously, because I lived here, our union hall backed up to the rail on off of North Main in the north side. Not that I really own property over there, but I felt he asked me would I chair the committee, facilitate the meeting to be able to allow the concerned citizens and the concerned business owners input a dialogue with officials from Metro along with elected officials. And so we conducted it in a manner like it was normal meetings where you signed to speak as a speaker, you had a time limit. If you wanted to get back on the program to speak again, you know, wait till everybody had their turn. The experience I learned was I read quite a bit about what took place during the Main Street. Obviously, I want to learn more because what you just hear or read in the news and in the blogs as far as the businesses that maybe were lost simply because the construction. Here, I have to say that Metro was very, very, I feel Metro was very transparent. Metro tried to explain what the modals were going to look like, what the facilities were going to look like, what the streets were going to be taken care of. I felt that the fair market on the eminent domaining of the people's properties, including some of those businesses, and there weren't very many, was more than what market rate was. I mean, they did well. What I felt like that, could there have been a better and open, more dialogue with the citizens? Yes. I felt like that there were times I felt like, and not coming from the elected officials, but maybe coming from Metro, was that you just came to the meetings just to be able to attend. I hear you, but do I really hear you? I know what went on. You had people from Irvington who obviously were real concerned. They didn't like the idea that the rail might be going down Irvington. And then you had people from Fulton who were opposed to the rail going down Fulton. Well, if you go there now and look at it, it's beautiful. And this summer, I understand that might be the first rail to open up and go. And I can tell you that I believe the near north side and the north side people, especially around Lindale Park, really can't wait. My concern, though, and I think I share the concern with most citizens of Houston, is about the parking. You have Washington Avenue, you know what the parking issue is within the neighborhoods. You can go to Midtown, same way, the parking issues. Metro and all of these lines, I think that city officials, along with the planning from the Metro and the planning department, probably need to do a better job of planning about what to do about the parking. Maybe even consider, you know, small 300 parking garages, you know, 300 car parking garages nearby somewhere, simply because you're going to have people. Currently, I cannot walk over to the rail. I'd love to be able to catch a rail. I'm going to drive over there. I'm going to park in somebody's front yard. I do that. Imagine what other people are going to do that want to take the rail, either going to the East End, going to Reliant Park, or for that matter, catching a rail going through University of Houston, TSU, and there's no parking. And that's, I think that's going to be a big concern and an issue in the upcoming years.
Okay. An issue that came up in council a little while ago that I think is probably going to come up again has to do with food trucks downtown. Currently, on the city, you know, as you know, Houston has built a reputation lately for being a real good food town, and food trucks have been among the leaders in that, you know, bringing new innovation in food styles and cuisines and whatnot. But right now, they're not allowed to, you know, they're restricted from operating downtown, and there's a group of them that are seeking to loosen those regulations and allow them to operate downtown like they can elsewhere in the city. What's your take on that?
Well, it's kind of hard for me to maybe share my opinion without not knowing all the facts involved in this, but I assure this. I think, though, that there's enough regulations already as far as what mandates what you can and cannot do. I think this is something that probably needs to be really looked hard into, simply because are they providing a service to, let's say, different businesses or different owners? Does the public want it? The public may choose to say, why not? I mean, you know, you're telling somebody, a small business who's just striving to provide something for the culture of our city, and then be able to tell them and say, no, this certain area is going to be blocked out simply because, could it be traffic? Could it be safety? Could it be the health reason? I think more needs to be looked into it. But I think I'm going to support any effort that allows any of these trucks with good safety records, good health records, no violations, be able to provide a service and share their foods and their cuisines with the community. I support it. I mean, I don't support prohibiting them from the downtown. I'm going to support their efforts and to be able to pick and choose wherever they like to go, as long as they're within law and safety.
Okay. In 2001, there was a charter amendment passed in the city of Houston that forbade it from offering domestic partner benefits mm-hmm. to city employees. As you know, times have changed. The Supreme Court made its ruling on the Defense of Marriage Act a couple months ago. I mean, that affects marriage at the federal level. But, you know, I think this issue is going to come up again. Mm-hmm. You know, some other Texas cities have taken this step. Would you support an effort, if one comes up, to repeal that charter amendment and allow the city of Houston to offer domestic partner benefits, you know, to unmarried or same-sex partners.
Absolutely. I will. I will support any amendment that will amend the charter, and I do support today as we speak, and I say that in my talks, I do support same-sex benefits. Sadly, though, is that the city, as a city goes into negotiations with any kind of insurance carrier, that needs to be brought up. You can tailor a insurance policy for your citizens or for your employees, but I think that whichever insurance company comes in to want to check into as far as being a vendor or through the procurement process, the city needs to ask those hardline questions. I come from an industry of firefighters, and in my industry, we know that there are persons out there that are prohibited from allowing some same-sex benefits. They're not able to have those kind of benefits there. And we, in our industry, I mean, we have 4,000 firefighters just active alone, not including their dependents. You are to have their dependents, we're looking at over 10,000 people, and we're also looking at retirees and then their dependents. So we're looking at a big group. There's approximately 23,000 city employees. This is a big group. I think you can get any insurance company to be able to say, look, can we possibly tailor a policy to where it includes and be inclusive of same-sex benefits? Absolutely, you can. I understand there's some stumbling blocks, some laws that might need to be looked into. Of course, you know what's going to happen here on the state level as far as our state government. They'll possibly try to prohibit anybody from ever achieving that. And I will firmly stand with those efforts to amend the charter and to be inclusive of same-sex benefits. Yes. Right.
I'm asking this question of all the candidates that I talked to. Who are you supporting in the mayor's race this year?
I am actually staying out of it. I actually am. There's a reason why. I've been real good friends with Denise Parker for over 16 years. She provided me, while I was the president of Firefighters Union, it was her that provided me, as her being a city controller, she provided me the numbers that I needed to go to Mr. Bill White, the mayor, in order to be able to provide what I thought was a budget for our collective bargaining contract. She helped me out understand exactly what the tax-based revenues were going to be and what the sales tax revenue is going to be. Ben Hall, I met him previously under Bob Lanier's administration. I really never worked with him closely. I think he is a very qualified person to run our city, as I do Denise Parker, but I have graciously and politely went to both of them and shared with them that I'm going to stay out of their race. I won't be attending any of their events, though I may have got caught at one or two, and so I had to go do another. So as I got caught with one event over with Ben Hall, I did go to Mayor Parker's grand opening of her campaign headquarters, because I firmly believe I want to be remain neutral.
Okay.
I'm not going to take a stance on who I'm going to support on that one.
We've covered a number of issues here, but I never actually asked you specifically what your priorities would be as a council member. So, give me your elevator pitch for what the sorts of things you would want to do as a council member.
Well, thank you for asking. And you know, I think me coming from the public safety sector, I think everyone's going to say public safety is going to be number one. Well, with me, that's a given. But who best knows about the public safety issue than someone who's actually been on the streets for 34 years and actually done it? And that's me. I didn't rise to the ranks of an administrator in the fire department. I've always been in the field. So I know what our members see in the field daily as they go through serving the citizens of Houston, either through the EMS, either through the fireside, and working with PD. We work hand in hand together, so I understand what that is. Now, outside, like I said, outside of just public safety being the number one, the infrastructure and the quality of life, I will ask the tough questions when it comes to the infrastructure, especially on the generator funds from the referendum for Rebuild Houston. There's a reason. There's still some neglected neighborhoods that are flooding, and what I am being assisted with as far as information is that possibly can we look at the funds and the generated revenue not going to where it's supposed to be going? Could it be going for administrative costs? Could it be going for other areas that these contractors and engineers are the ones telling me that there's areas in our community that are still very much in need. Worst first neighborhoods need this. I share this with everybody. Go, We have 32 rescue boats in the city. We have them assigned in firehouses where the flooding is prone. And those are the areas that are not being worked on. And how do I know that? Because I'm in those neighborhoods and I see it. So I will tackle that issue on immediately. I will seek support from other council members to see if we can amend the current ordinance to say that those dedicated funds go exactly where they're for. Worst first neighborhoods is what we're going to do. Now, quality of life, I think that's probably a priority for everybody as far as our safety in the neighborhoods for our parks and libraries, walkways, vandalism, things like this. I mean, we are a first-class city. We're growing, obviously. The economy is good. People are moving here to Houston. People are moving to Texas, the metropolitan area. We still have the traffic problems. People commuting from out. We have to make it accessible for people to, as far as like, be able to commute, maybe park your vehicle, be able to get on a metro, and then go to your destination. I think that if you made it accessible to everybody, you will be attracting more. But as Houston becomes more populated based on the economy for density and population, citizens want to make sure that the core services are being able to be maintained. Because I can share this with you. Our fire, our EMS, and I know that the police just were enjoying a very good increase in some police schools, some cadet schools, same way with fire. But are we keeping up with the rate of the way the city's going? I don't believe so. And that needs to be taken. That needs to be looked at very hard. I've done it. When we had Katrina, we know what took place. If you lived in the city long enough, you know what took place with the citizens of Louisiana having to come and evacuate out of Louisiana, come to Houston. How many of those stayed behind? Well, we never increased none of our fleets as far as our police, our fire, and our EMS. We did for a moment, and then we went back to the way we were. Those poor citizens never left Houston. They loved it here. They stayed here. Well, now we're getting more. And all of a sudden, when we get to the point to where we're threatened about layoffs because of the economy or the budget, we want to eliminate some more of these programs or some more of these the services. You can't do that. What are we doing wrong? And we're not going to blame the pension on that one. You can't just blame one entity simply because we had to eliminate five extra ambulances, or we can't do this kind of program for police as far as hotspots or looking at the neighborhoods that are doing the illegal dumping. There's so many things that I know. And what do I want to accomplish? I want to be able to walk in on the day knowing the issues already. There's no learning curve with me. I'm a city employee for 34 years. I'm retired now and I'm campaigning full time. But I want to be able to walk in knowing where the areas are that are needed for whatever services they are, whether it be target, illegal dumping, abandoned homes, the hotspots for drug activity, illegal activity, and also the same goes for the elderly, the welfare, the citizens. My mom's 85 years old, still drives. And I go to so many senior citizen centers, and every time I look at the seniors, they all remind me of my mom. And my mom is, and my parents is the one that kept me humbled. And do I think I can do a good job? Absolutely.
All right.
I can do a great job.
Roland Chavez, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Mr. Governor, thank you.